looked for it there. I stared into the night and shivered. I was very glad that I had not been in this city when the golem wandered the streets in its physical form. It was as near to noon as I could reckon by the sun when I strolled into the restaurant that had offered free Wi-Fi. I brushed my hair and braided it, securing it with a band I'd stolen from the person I'd taken the money from. I walked directly to the doors marked WC, having read just enough British mysteries to know that WC stood for water closet, which is a bathroom. The women's restroom door had a doe-eyed woman in a pink dress painted on it by someone who was better than an amateur. The bathroom was clean and bright and had plenty of soap and paper towels. I looked in the mirror and saw that I had a large bruise down my face on the opposite side from my scar. My eyes were shadowed, and my cheeks were hollow. Coyote Me had helped herself to the Mastiff's food and a couple of rodents of unusual shape, but that was all I'd eaten since the vampires had taken me. I had no idea how long I'd been unconscious. I looked like the victim of domestic abuse. I smiled experimentally, and to my surprise, that helped a lot. In Prague, apparently they do not use euros. They use something called koruna. Also in Prague, or at least in the little Wi-Fi restaurant in Prague, people are kind. There were 10 people in the restaurant, including the staff, 5 Czech women, 3 Czech men, and 2 Russian tourists, both women. We spoke roughly a dozen languages between us, though I might have missed one or two, but no one spoke English. One of the Russians spoke a little German. She didn't have quite as much as I did, though, to be fair, my German tends to be Z-German. What is not centered around cars and things mechanical is closer to the language spoken in Iceland, which hasn't changed in the last 1,000 years, than anything spoken in modern Berlin. So maybe her German was fine, and mine was the problem. I think she understood that I had gotten separated from my tour, which is the story I made up on the spot. My bus, I explained, had gone on to Milan with my luggage and things. I was going to use my e-reader to get on the internet and call home. Home would then relay information for me. It was actually useful that none of them could speak to me, because it reduced the number of lies I had to tell them, and also made it harder for them to offer me a place to stay, which is what I think one of the Czech men was offering. No one appeared worried, so I don't think he was offering me what it looked like he was trying to. They, collectively it felt like, took my 20-euro note and, after consulting a cell phone for the current exchange rate, carefully counted out 550 koruna in various bills and coins. The waitress brought me out a soft drink and a thick sandwich, waving away my attempts to pay her. I pulled out my e-reader, stolen, and turned it on. There had been no charging cable or I'd have taken it, and the power bar on the screen told me I'd have to be fast, which was interesting with an e-reader that probably had less than half the computing power of Adam's watch. Setting up a generic email account at one of the big anonymous servers, Coyote Girl was taken, as were several variants, took up too much time. I needed something that would cue the pack without attracting attention. I didn't have to just worry about the vampire. I was pretty sure that various government agencies were doing their best to keep track of our correspondences. One coyote lost worked. I wrote a short email that said, "Dear people, Prague is lovely this time of year. You should visit. M." And then I sent it to everyone in the pack and a few out of it like Z's son Tad and Tony, whose email addresses I remembered. Then I turned the e-reader off to conserve its battery. I ate the sandwich and drank the soda. Just before I turned it off, the e-reader had told me it had 20% power, and I should plug it in or it might shut itself off. I knew I should leave the cafe, wait a few hours, and come back. That's what I'd planned to do. But the lure of contacting home was too strong. I told myself I needed to know about the Prague werewolves. If I could round up some support from them, it could be useful. If not, then I could hop a bus for somewhere else and try again. Waiting until later might not be practical, I reasoned. I'd run across the scent of 3 different werewolves on the way here. In a city the size of Prague, with only one pack, that either meant that the pack was centered in Old Town, or that they were hunting me. Even if they didn't know about me, the kidnapped by the Lord of Night but subsequently escaped mate of the Columbia Basin Pack Alpha, coyotes don't smell like dogs. Not quite. Eventually, if I kept running around on 4 feet, they'd get interested and track me down. I had gotten lucky last night, and I didn't like to rely on luck. I needed to know if the Prague werewolves were tied to the Lord of Night right this minute. Really. I turned on the e-reader and checked my email. I had one response from benjamin.shaw@it.pnnl.gov. It said, "Oh my fucking goddamn flying fucking monkeys. Where? Are you safe? How did you get away? Did you get a fucking way?" He used asterisks for the swear words. Apparently his work had had a discussion about swear words in professional emails with him. Being Ben, he'd actually increased the swear words, but added asterisks. It made me laugh, even as my eyes watered with relief. Of course Ben would be checking his email. Computers were his job. Prague, as ever, as usual, yes. What can you tell me about our co-workers in Prague, considering dropping in for consult? Ben was from Great Britain originally, so he might actually have more insight into the werewolves here than I did.
"Hairy butt bunnies, girl. Good for you. Prague boss is dangerous bastard. Has real hard on for the boss at your first job. No one but the two of them knows why, that I ever heard. And there has been a lot of discussion about it. So someone is suppressing information. It wasn't helped when we came out of the closet, something our colleague in Prague was very unhappy about. Can you avoid?" Okay, so there was bad blood between the Alpha here and the boss at my first job. If I called the werewolves co-workers, then my first job would be the werewolf pack I grew up in, so Bran. Well, that could explain why I thought there was an issue with the Alpha here. I might have overheard a conversation sometime. It wouldn't have been important to me at the time, but I'd filed some alert concerning the Prague Alpha. "Is he working with the Italians?" Emailing back and forth wasn't as good as texting. The anonymous email server took its own sweet time downloading.
"No, but the next closest company in Brno is. They were a part of Gévaudan and are now running scared of Prague. I'm on phone with Sam's brother right now. Sam's brother says that Prague CEO Libor might get a kick out of helping you as a one-upmanship move on Sam's father, and because he hates Italians more than anyone. He owns bakery in Old Town. Don't know address. My boss is headed to Italy. Does he know you are visiting Prague?"
Ben was on the phone to Charles, the Maroc son, who was, among a lot of other things, an information guru. If he said Libor was a good bet, I'd take it. "He knows I'm on my own, and he can find me via GPS if he needs to find me." He'd know the GPS was our mate bond, because that was one thing it was pretty consistently good at. The e-reader gave me another warning. "Out of battery on borrowed e-reader. Sorry." I sent the email, then the e-reader died. I wasn't sure if it had had time to upload my last message or not. I slipped the device back into my backpack. As I got ready to go, one of the men, I think he was the restaurant manager, brought a bag of food to the table and gave it to me. He was an older man with kind eyes and a rumbly voice, and he smelled of cigars and coffee. He said something solemnly, as if he were making a vow, reaching out and gently brushing my bruised cheek. Behind him, the older woman who had brought out my free lunch wiped away a tear. I had no idea what he said, but my nose could smell the memory of his sorrow and his sincerity now. I felt like a fraud for a moment, deluding these people into believing I needed help. And then I remembered that I'd been violently kidnapped and hauled to Italy, and was now wandering Prague with one stolen set of clothes, 550 corona, which translated to a little more than $20, and a defunct e-reader. Maybe I did need their help. I stood on my tiptoes and kissed his cheek. The whole place burst into applause. People are pretty cool. Some pretty cool person picked my pocket while I was wandering around Old Town trying to find a bakery where there were lots of werewolves. I'd found one bakery that a werewolf had gone into sometime that day, but the scent was no stronger in the building than it had been outside. Somewhere between that bakery and Wenceslas Square, a more modern city square than Old Town Square, where I found a McDonald's, someone stole all the money I had in one of my pockets. It was embarrassing. My only excuse is that there were a lot of people wandering about, and most of them didn't pay attention to personal space the way Americans do. It could have been any of 20 people who bumped into me. If the person who'd stolen my money had been nervous about it, likely I could have caught them, because I'd have smelled it. He or she had made off with roughly $10, hardly worth their effort even if it was half of my resources. At least I'd been smart enough to split my money between pockets. I hastily checked my mostly empty backpack, but they hadn't gotten the food or the dead e-reader. I bought a small soda with my diminished funds and sat down on one side of a bench next to a statue of a horseman and ate the food before it was stolen, too. The woman breastfeeding her baby on the other end of the bench paid me no attention. A man with two children in tow brought the young mother a sausage baked in a bun and an orange juice bottle. I licked the last of my food from my fingers, gave the happy little family a grin, and wandered off. The sausage smelled good. It made me... I slowed my steps. Made me think of home. "Excuse me," I said to the family. "Do any of you speak English?" The oldest of the children, a boy of 12, did, and he was able to tell me where they'd bought his mother's lunch, a lunch that smelled very faintly of werewolf. The bakery was down one of the narrow streets in a building that looked like it had grown there beginning sometime in the first century. I don't suppose it was that old. Not even Prague, I think, was that old. But it had been there a long time. It had taken over the buildings to either side of the original one, growing like China had, taking over previous civilizations and replacing them with its own. The smell of yeast and wheat was warm and welcoming as I stepped through the old door to stand in line. The bakery played up the age of the building to the tourist trade, though a lot of the people in line, from the scents they carried, seemed to be locals. I wasn't any older than I looked, a well-preserved mid-30s. My history degree emphasis was skewed more to people and politics than it was to fashion and living conditions. All that meant I didn't know for sure, but I thought that the bakery rocked a very sanitized medieval feel with all of its warm, yeast-smelling heart, rather than looking as a bakery would have during the actual Middle Ages. The people hustling behind the counter and carrying trays to tables all wore clothing that looked like something a set director had decided people wore in Prague when the building had been built. There was a costume feel that made them representative rather than authentic. They weren't uniform, in the sense that no two outfits were exactly the same. But the color scheme and general style made it clear that anyone wearing the costumes worked there. A hand-painted sign that hung on the wall behind the bar told English-speaking visitors that there had been a bakery here in that spot for over 450 years. The sign in German said the same thing, and I expected the four other signs that hung around the bakery followed suit in various other languages. Prague was a city that catered to visitors, and this bakery was no exception. When it was my turn, a young-faced man in dark trousers and a white shirt with blousy sleeves sporting heavily embroidered ribbons greeted me warmly. "Do you speak English?" I asked.
"Of course," he said with a strong British accent. "What can I get for you? We have today cherry, apple, and peach colache fresh this morning. If you are interested in lunch..."
"Moon called," I said very quietly underneath his practiced patter. He would hear me just fine, but I didn't need everyone in the busy bakery to overhear. I addressed him with that appellation because my nose told me he was a werewolf, and because my words would tell him that I knew what he was. "I need to speak to Libor on business." The smile froze on his face, and he stopped mid-sentence. "I'm from the United States, the Columbia Basin Pack," I added. His nostrils flared. "Just tell him," I said impatiently. "I can't explain things properly here." He put a hand on the counter and easily hopped over it. It was a move within the abilities of a young human man of physical prowess, which is what he looked to be.
"Come with me," he said.
The words were peremptory, but his tone and manner were not. He led me through a narrow archway into a room filled with tables and chairs set up for people who wanted to eat their treats or lunches inside, and most of the tables were full. He waded gracefully between the tables, and I followed him to a door in the back of the room. It led out to a garden area. Like the yard where the Mastiff had lived, it was the center of the block, surrounded by buildings, but open to the air. There were tables here, too, but none of them was occupied.
"You aren't a werewolf," said my guide.
"My maid is," I told him.
"If you would be so kind as to wait here," the werewolf told me, "I will let Libor know you want to see him."
"He'll not have a choice," I told him, and he stiffened. "Curiosity at the very least will bring him out. Tell him I'm the maid of the Alpha of the Columbia Basin Pack, and I'm on the run from the Lord of Night, who kidnapped me."
"Buona rata," exclaimed the werewolf.
Then he held up a hand when I started to explain further.
"No need to talk to me. I'll let Libor know. It might be a while."
He left. A while was right. It soon became evident that if Libor wanted to see me, it wasn't a priority. I waited on my feet for 10 or 15 minutes until one of the human waitstaff, and not one who spoke English, produced a tray with one of those baked bread-wrapped sausages that had brought me here, 3 pastries that looked like a bagel filled with various fruit fillings, and a tall glass of lemonade. The harried woman looked pointedly at her tray, then at the tables. I picked one with a comfortable-looking seat that backed up to one of the surrounding walls and sat so she could put the tray down. She smiled, then said something in a happy voice before whisking herself out of the garden and back into the bakery. I was left alone to eat in the late afternoon sun. Even though I'd just eaten a fairly large meal, I had no trouble eating a second one. I finished both food and drink and set the tray aside. The sun warmed my back, and birds sang in trees, and my eyelids, stupid things, decided that the warmth, the gentle sounds, and the smell of werewolves meant that it was safe to sleep. I stood up and walked the little area, trying to stay awake. I hadn't gotten any sleep last night. I knew, without acknowledging it, that when I started to talk to dead things, other ghosts seemed to sense it. A few months ago, after a rather violent encounter with a ghost, I'd spent days with ghosts following me. Ghosts are mostly bits and pieces of people, of emotions left behind, so it was like being followed by zombies. They want me to do something for them, but there isn't enough of them left to communicate exactly what that is. Mostly, when I did find out what they needed, it wasn't anything I could do. I couldn't fix the life they lived, the people they failed. I couldn't give them their life back. Anyway, I didn't know exactly what the golem had been, except that it was complicated. But he had evidently powered up my ghost attraction circuit to stun. Judging from the results, my meeting with the golem had lit me up like a target for any ghost in the area. The lingering effects made certain that my safe little corner next to the river had been invaded all night by ghosts. A city as old as Prague collects a lot of ghosts along the way. The worst of them had been a drowning victim. I'd done my best to ignore it. However, it was true that drowned ghosts smell like the body of water they drown in. The Vltava smelled like any other river from the top, but evidently having been occupied by humans for better than a millennium meant that the bottom was full of rotting things. And I'd learned something new last night, too. Apparently some drowned ghosts were just like the stories. They could drip real water. Being dripped on by a foul-smelling ghost all night had not been conducive to sleep. Though there'd been a few ghosts as I'd followed the werewolf through the bakery, they hadn't been drippy or smelly, just faded remembrances of people who'd once worked or lived in the buildings. They drifted past me and through the visitors. And whatever the golem had called up in me had faded enough that they had taken no notice of me at all. I'd returned the favor. There were currently no ghosts in the little sunlit garden where I was. The sounds of the tourist-filled streets were muted. Whatever was going to happen to me, I wasn't going to be attacked, robbed, or arrested in this little garden until the Alpha of Prague came to see me.
I sat back down at the table I'd claimed for my own. I put my head down and closed my eyes, letting the sweet scents of fruit filling and sugar frosting linger in my senses as I fell asleep.
5. Adam.
While I traveled by bus, Adam made do with a luxurious private jet. That is kind of how my life goes.
You contacted her? Asked Elisaveta in Russian as she put Mercy's repaired necklace into Adam's hand. Elisaveta usually spoke to him in Russian, and mostly that was fine. Adam's mother had spoken Russian in their home throughout his childhood, leaving him almost as fluent in it as he was in English. But leaving Mercy behind when he just found her was painful. And whatever the old witch had done to allow him to contact Mercy, now that their brief conversation was over, it had left the werewolf magic, both his pack ties and his mate bond, in a state of outrage. A painful state. The combination of loss and pain left him unable to speak in Russian or English. He closed his fingers around the necklace and drew a deep breath. When that wasn't enough, he shut his eyes and rested his head against the back of the airplane seat. His wolf was fighting for control in a way it hadn't since he'd been very new, and had been pretty much since Mercy had gone missing. He'd forgotten how tiring it was to fight the beast to a standstill. He'd had decades to become complacent, to believe that he had a handle on just how bad things could get. As the hours had passed and Mercy was no closer than she had been, the wolf had fought and fought and fought. When his mating bond had found Mercy again, faint though the signal had been, just after he'd gotten on the plane, he'd thought he would be back to normal. But once the wolf figured out just how far away Mercy was, how poorly the bond was functioning, he'd found a quiet corner in the plane designed to please the kinds of people who rented private jets as a matter of course, and had been trying to meditate to keep his beast under control when Elisaveta found him. She'd sat down on the floor next to him, with an ease a woman of her age shouldn't have had, and handed him a small bottle of Russian vodka. He'd handed it back. Thank you, but not right now. She took the bottle and took a long drink before capping it and tucking it away somewhere in the layers of her clothing.
To break a werewolf's mating bond, Elisaveta said. This is something very difficult, but to block it?
She laughed gently and patted his cheek.
Such a thing is child's play to such as I. Witches like me and werewolves like you have existed in the same places for centuries. Much werewolf lore has been passed down in my family and others.
She spoke in Russian, and the wolf quieted as he let himself be comforted by the way it brought back childhood memories of his mother sitting beside him and explaining how the world worked to him in much the same voice.
I have a book written by my great-grandmother, she said. It is all about werewolves. A whole section of it deals with mating bonds and pack bonds, which are different aspects of the same magic. I am sure that many witch families have copies of this book, or one like it. She tells us that a specific kind of circle of warding, one that does not let magic pass in or out, will block the bond. With a day to work, I could put together something that could do it for a few hours. Give me a week and the right ingredients, and I could block it for longer.
So the fact that I can feel her now is only a sign that whatever they have been using to block our mating bond has burned out, he asked.
A sign that something has changed, Elisaveta said.
She pursed her lips and nodded to herself.
Perhaps we could ask her.
I've tried, Adam told her. I think that our bond is working fine, but we are just too far away. Without the pack for me to draw upon for power, we might have to be in the same city to make real contact. Elisaveta snorted.
Adia, you underestimate me. If you have something of Mercy's, I can use your bond to give you a few minutes to talk.
In that moment, he'd have given her his heart, dug it out of his chest in order to hear Mercy's voice. But that would have been dumb, and in the end, all Elisaveta had needed had been Mercy's necklace. He wasn't stupid, so he made her work her magic in the biggest of the rooms in that huge plane, so that the vampires and Honey would be there if something went wrong and he lost control. Elisaveta had come through for him again, as she always had. So now he knew that Mercy was alive. Eyes closed, heart pounding, Adam pressed his body back into the leather chair. Mercy had even rescued herself from the monsters. But now she was lost and alone somewhere in Europe. Both he and his wolf found that unacceptable. But much, much better than knowing that she was bleeding and taken by vampires, which was all he'd had before. The monster inside him didn't want to fly to Italy and treat with a vampire. It wanted to go to Italy and kill all the vampires, all of them, everywhere. Then find Mercy, take her home, and barricade her in their home so that no one else could take her from them. Part of Adam's trouble in bringing the wolf under control was that he pretty much felt the same way. Only his intellect could see how disastrous that might be. Still, his heart fought on the side of the monster. Elisaveta, he knew because he could smell the faint whiff of her scent, a blend of tea tree oil and herbs, kissed his forehead. Then she stood up and said, "I am an old woman, and this has tired me." "And hurt you," he said, opening his eyes to look up at her. Witchcraft was powered by pain. The witch's or someone else's. She had dug a knife into her scarred forearm and cut a slice of skin. When she'd burned it in the incense, she'd had to grit her teeth, as if burning her flesh had done even more damage to her. "I'm sorry," he told her.
"Don't fret, Adya," she said. "A little pain and it is gone. Pain and I are old friends. I am going to go use one of the back rooms and sleep on the couch."
Mercy was scared of the old witch, as she should be. Elisaveta was dangerous. Her own family was terrified of her. But she reminded Adam of his mother, her accent, the way she smelled, her turns of phrase, and he couldn't be afraid of her. "Sweet dreams," he said, and she smiled at him with her eyes. No one spoke until she left the room.
"So what did you learn?" Stefan asked. "Has Buonarrota harmed Mercy?" asked Marsilia.
Adam realized that he didn't know, and that set the wolf off again. He gritted his teeth and fought for control. If Buonarrota had done something to Mercy, he would have known it. She was all right. Tired, sad, but defiant, even toward him. And funny. She was all right.
"Adam?" asked Marsilia.
"Leave him be," growled Honey. "He needs a moment."
Honey had not been happy that Adam had chosen her to travel with vampires. She didn't have much experience with them, and that's how she'd preferred it. He'd explained that he needed her because the Lord of Night was addicted to werewolf blood, and preferred females to a degree that was pretty rare in a creature as old as he was. Most predators became quite practical about their food after a few centuries. Adam intended to use Honey, if he could, to distract Buonarrota. He trusted her to be able to defend herself from the Lord of Night if everything went sideways. To prove that no matter how old Adam got, he would never understand women, telling Honey he was using her as bait for the nastiest vampire on the planet made her happier with his decision.
"It really isn't just Mercy," she said.
"What isn't just Mercy?"
"The reason that my status in the pack has risen," she said. "I thought it was just Mercy who was behind the shake-up in the pack organization."
"No, Honey," he told her. "It is you. It always has been you."
"Buonarrota has a pet werewolf," Honey said.
"I know." He waited for her to elaborate because Honey didn't do much casual talk.
"Lenka," she said. "I didn't know her very well, but she and Peter were lovers before I met him. His first, as human or werewolf. They weren't in love, either of them, but he liked her, even after she picked her alpha instead of Peter. It sent him wandering, though, until he found my pack, and me. I always figured I owed her for that."
Adam put a hand on her shoulder. "Werewolves need contact more than humans do. It had taken him a long time to understand how important touch was, but he didn't forget it now.
She was strong, Honey said in a low voice. Strong and brave and true. She had a moral compass that always pointed north. She was like Mercy in that, but without the sense of humor.
Lenka took herself and the world very seriously. Honey closed her eyes and rested her cheek against his hand.
When Buonarrota took her, we were in Russia. Peter was restless, and he liked to travel.
Submissive wolves and their mates were welcome in any pack they chose to honor with their presence. Alpha werewolves practically needed a treaty drawn up to move around. Only Mercy's kidnapping meant he didn't have to bother with the politics that were usually a basic part of any travel plans he made.
We didn't hear about it for almost a decade, Honey said. How Buonarrota killed the whole pack. Peter's first pack. Most of the pack, anyway. He didn't kill Zenobia or Lenka, and we heard how that was a lot worse. Peter was wild.
Her breathing was labored, as if it hurt to draw in air and let it out. But she didn't say anything about why Peter hadn't done something, or if he'd tried and what had happened. Knowing Peter as he had, Adam couldn't believe that Peter hadn't tried something.
Will Buonarrota know you? Adam asked. No, she said. We never met.
Honey had pulled away from his touch then. She wiped her eyes with her thumbs and he pretended not to see. She looked away for a moment, then met his eyes.
You think I can do this? I don't know anything about vampires.
I think, said Adam slowly, that you've never let anyone down in your life. You won't fail for any reason other than that old vampire is just too powerful or too smart, or because the rest of us fail you. I honestly believe that you are our best hope for winning. After a moment, she nodded.
Okay, I'll do my best.
Buonarrota had sent the second email by then, the one Marsilia had predicted. It had come very early in the morning, just before the vampires retired for the day. The email had been a real piece of fiction. Buonarrota had been coming to visit Marsilia when he'd happened upon a terrible wreck. The mate of the oh-so-famous Adam Hauptmann was dying from a tragic car accident. He had scooped her up and taken her to his home, where the healer in his employ had fixed her up. Having done so, he was concerned lest more harm come her way. As her rescuer, he felt some responsibility for her continued safety. He therefore invited both Marsilia and Adam to come to Milan and convince him that Mercedes would be safe in their care. He allowed them two people each, as well as the pilot and co-pilot of the airplane. Wasn't that just swell of him? The problem was, the Lord of Night really was powerful enough that it was necessary to play his game as long as he was willing to avoid outright attack. Adam hadn't just taken Marsilia's word about that. He'd called Charles. And information wasn't the only thing he'd called Charles for. I need a pilot, Adam told the Maroc son, after absorbing everything that Charles knew about the Master of Milan. They both knew he was asking if Charles would be that pilot.
Da says I can't do it.
The edge in his voice told Adam that Charles wasn't happy about that. Adam didn't even ask how Bran had found out about Mercy. Adam's pack knew, and someone would have called the Maroc to keep him informed. The Columbia Basin pack might no longer be affiliated with the Maroc, but habit was a difficult thing. Charles continued speaking.
He is keeping his distance from you to save us all, he said. Too many people know me. He is right about that. He said that it's likely Buonarrota expects me to be your pilot. Otherwise, he wouldn't have made such a direct reference to the flight crew. People like him don't pay any attention to the staff.
Of course, Adam had missed that. He'd been distracted. He's right, Adam said. Of course he is right. And if you are not a surprise, then you become...
Da called it a complicated hostage, Charles said dryly. I told him that I could protect myself, and I got a lecture on diplomacy. Apparently, that wasn't the point. If I go, I become a thread that leads to my father, which makes me very interesting.
too interesting for the delicate balance of manners and power that Marsilia is organizing in the hopes of getting everyone, including Mercy, home safely. He might be willing to throw everyone else away for a chance to take Dodd down, so I have to stay here. I might chance it anyway, but as it happens, I've had a run-in or three with Bonarata. He knows my face.
Charles cleared his throat.
Dodd told me to tell you that he very much expects and trusts that you will get Mercy home safely.
At that point, Adam hadn't slept since the vampires had taken Mercy, and it was beginning to affect him. But he was still sane enough to trust Bran's judgment. If he says you wouldn't be an asset, he's probably right.
Where did that leave him?
Oh, yes. So do you know of a plane we can hire to take us to Italy? Someone who won't be surprised or worried about carrying vampires and werewolves? Adam's firm had two or three charter companies that they used. But the vampires added a serious problem to the whole thing. No one could afford for humanity to find out about vampires. Vietnam would be a kindergarten tea party compared to what would happen if people discovered there were vampires feeding on them and playing games with their minds.
That I can help with, Charles said, and he gave Adam a phone number. It's a small firm, but big enough for this. The pilot and owner of the company, Harris, is a goblin, so you won't have to hide anything from him. He flies out of Northern California.
His voice gentled.
He's a good pilot. He'll get you where you are going. Then you can go fetch our Mercy home before she destroys the Lord of Night's holdings and causes a war.
Adam couldn't help but laugh. She would, too, if she could. But even if she thought she was indestructible, he knew better.
Thanks, Adam said, his voice ragged. I needed the reminder. Mercy is pretty good at survival.
It's a coyote thing, survival, Charles said.
And Adam suddenly realized that Charles, too, was under no illusions as to the identity of Mercy's real father.
Get some sleep, Adam. You're getting foggy, and you can't afford to be anything less than your best.
He'd followed Charles's advice about the plane and about the sleep. He'd decided on honey. Then he'd made the difficult decision of who his second person would be. Aiden was right out. He was a target for the Fae. Adam didn't have the resources to protect the boy and retrieve Mercy at the same time. No matter how useful the fire-touched Aiden would be. Hoel was out because without Aiden to help him control the Tipizena fire spirit he held, he was too likely to be a liability. Another time, Adam would feel pretty good about taking Warren or Daryl and leaving the pack with only one of his top two people. But right now, there were too many balls in the air. Aiden's status as most wanted by the Fae was the biggest issue. Though the Grey Lords had agreed to leave him alone, recent events had lessened Adam's faith that they had absolute control, even of their fellow Grey Lords. Aiden represented too much possible power, and the absence of both Adam and Mercy would be a tempting time for some independent Fae to make a play. Especially since Mercy had been kidnapped, which made them appear weak. Like the werewolves, the Fae were predators, and weakness would be an almost irresistible draw. And the pack's resources were strained trying to make their territories safe from supernatural predators. It was a delicate balance that would need both Warren and Daryl to keep a lid on troubles at home when Adam left. But the attack had not been aimed at the werewolves alone, no matter how personal it was. It had been aimed at the coalition of supernatural powers that Bonarata seemed to believe existed in the Tri-Cities, a belief that Marsilia had been encouraging for a long time. So they should travel with a fair representation from the membership of their imaginary support group, right? Adam appreciated the irony that Bonarata's attack was making real the alliance whose imaginary existence was, probably, the catalyst for the Master of Milan's kidnapping of Mercy. So he contacted Marsilia and suggested that instead of three vampires and three werewolves, maybe they should find a couple of other people to bring. Marsilia hadn't been difficult to convince. As she'd said, there were only two other master vampires in the Tri-Cities. One was crazy and his loyalty was doubtful, and she didn't want to bring him into contact with Bonarata.
Stefan had agreed to go, but she would still have had to bring at least one underling vampire, which would be a tacit admission of weakness. They settled on a representative from the goblins. Adam hadn't known who the leader of the goblins in the Tri-Cities was, but Marsilia did, and he'd agreed to come. They weren't a long-lived race, as Fay went, but they were clever and more powerful than most people gave them credit for. Adam liked that they were often underestimated. Marsilia liked that they were old allies of hers. They were, Adam had found, more reliable and oddly honorable for one of the Fey folk. As for Adam, his first pick for the empty slot was Z. The old Fey had grumbled and grumped because he badly wanted to come, but finally told Adam that he would not be an asset. Like Aiden, he was too likely to draw attacks from outside interests who would otherwise stay out of matters that did not concern them. Moreover, he and Bonarata had had interaction in the past, one in which the vampire had not come out on top. If they were going to try to negotiate, and Marsilia and Charles, coming to the conclusion separately, believed that was the best way to get Mercy out alive, then Z could not come. Adam hadn't asked Tad. Like Aiden, Tad was too likely to be a target for European Fey looking for power. Equally possible was that he would draw fire aimed at Z. Adam didn't trust any other Fey enough to bring them into this. So he had asked Elizaveta Arkadyevna Vishevetskaya, and the old Russian witch had been very pleased to accept. Very pleased. He was glad that she'd agreed to come too. His beast, his heart, and the abused pack magic all subsided eventually. He opened his eyes to see that, outside of the witch, they were all still gathered in the smaller of the airplane's little sitting areas. Honey sat on his left, Stefan on his right. Marsilia and Honey were in the facing seats, Elizaveta's empty one in the middle. The goblin sat on his heels in the walkway and looked perfectly comfortable doing so. With the shades pulled, the quiet rumble of the engines was the only real indication that they were in an airplane. This plane had been built to shepherd captains of industry, sheikhs, and princes. The floor was carpeted, and the seats were creamy leather and polished walnut. "Adam," said Marsilia after a moment, her voice oddly gentle. She asked, "Are you all right? Did you speak with her?" He rubbed his face and moved to the edge of his seat. "I did." He gave his comrades a genuine smile. "You know Mercy. She escaped and is now traveling somewhere in the luggage compartment of a bus. How does that change our game?"
"He will be furious," said Marsilia.
She smiled a surprisingly sweet expression on such a dangerous woman.
"Somehow, when she is destroying other people's carefully laid plans, she is not so annoying."
"Fabulous," said the goblin. "Such a clever coyote is your Mercy." Mercy had seemed frayed, but Adam would never admit that in the present company. "Never admit weakness before your enemies" had been his mantra long before he'd been changed. And he wouldn't betray Mercy's either. He just met the goblin, and Marsilia was not a fan of his wife. "Do we continue to Milan?" Adam asked. "Or divert to another country and try to find Mercy before he finds her?"
"Milan," said Stefan, "this isn't an isolated incident, something he can only do once. Next time he might make a more lethal move." "What if the Fey threw in with us?" Honey asked. "Would that be enough to back him off?"
The goblin, who went by the human name of Larry Sethaway, shook his head. "Never happen," he said. "The Fey would rather watch the battle than pick at the corpses like the carrion crows they are." He grinned briefly, fully aware that in the supernatural world, it was the goblins who were looked upon as scavengers. "Can't hardly get them all pointed in one direction if they were all dying of thirst and there was only one place to get water. I don't mind them as non-combatants, but I'd just as soon keep them off the field. You don't know who they'll decide to kill first, your enemies or you." The goblins didn't consider themselves Fey, though the reverse wasn't true. Most of the Fey looked upon the goblins as sort of low-born, weak, stupid cousins. Some of the Fey looked upon them as food, and the goblins never forgot that. Larry could pass for human, though some of his kind could not. When he'd met them at the airport, he'd been wearing dark glasses to cover his yellow-green eyes,
and leather driving gloves to hide his four-fingered hands. Here in the plane, he'd left off both.
I agree, said Marsilia, both with Larry and with Stefan.
She smiled a little, a cat smile.
Let's not tell him we know she's gone. Let's see what he chooses to do now that he's lost her.
Will he believe we don't know? Asked Tunny. She's Adam's maid. The only reason we know she escaped is because Elisaveta was able to use their bond to work her own magic,
Marsilia answered. Stefan nodded.
And Wolf told him that your mate bond is erratic. If you act as if you don't know, he'll probably believe it.
He might just tell us that she escaped, Marsilia said. But I don't think he will. It betrays a weakness, a mistake. He doesn't like admitting to real mistakes, only pretend ones.
Like if he killed her, murmured Stefan. Oops, I accidentally killed your wife, poor thing. I hope you didn't care for her too much. I just don't know my own strength.
Would he have done that, asked Honey, if she hadn't gotten away?
Stefan glanced at Marsilia, who glanced surreptitiously at Adam.
I am very glad Mercy managed to get away, Marsilia said finally.
Adam knew diplomacy when he heard it.
What would you have done with me, said Adam very quietly, if he had killed her while you were trapped in here with me?
She met his gaze with her own.
Died with everyone else if you lost control or destroyed this plane, she said. But you wouldn't have given Jacopo...
Jacob, she corrected herself with a cool smile.
You wouldn't have allowed him such an easy victory as that. I know you too well. But Mercy is not dead.
She leaned forward.
I have not lied to you about the danger we face. I do think that we may come out of here with nothing worse than an unplanned trip to Europe. But there is an equal chance that he will start killing. And if he does, all of us will die.
Larry leaned his head in the direction of the cockpit.
Including our pilot and co-pilot? Such a shame. He is quite beautiful for one of our kind.
The pilot, he meant. The co-pilot was a werewolf, though not Charles. Marsilia smiled at the goblin, and Adam realized, somewhat to his surprise, that she genuinely liked Larry. He wasn't used to associating Marsilia with such a gentle emotion as that.
No flirting until we are back home, and your wife can't blame me, she said.
Larry shrugged. No harm in looking, is there?
Stefan stiffened. He looked at Adam.
Mercy is trying to get my attention. Do you have any message for her?
Tell her to stay safe, Adam said. See if she knows where she is yet.
He made note that Stefan's bonds with Mercy were able to function at a greater distance than the mating bond. He didn't like it, but he made note of it. Stefan smiled compassionately.
It is a simpler thing, he told Adam. The tie between vampire and prey than the one between mates, as the bond between master and slave is simpler than a marriage.
And Mercy is bleeding.
He held up a reassuring hand. From a few small wounds only, but the blood feeds her call.
He took out a pocket knife and cut a shallow wound on his thumb. He put the bleeding digit in his mouth, then froze. Adam was determined not to be jealous. He was too worried about Mercy to be jealous. If she could contact the vampire, then they had two ways to find her. Two was better than one. If Adam died here, Stefan could still get Mercy to safety. Even the wolf thought so. It was night again when they landed at the private airport Buonarroti had specified. There would be no trouble from customs. Adam's pilot and the owner of the company had assured him that all of the paperwork had been taken care of. His pilot had also timed the flight, so they landed on the morning side of midnight. Adam was pretty sure that Buonarroti didn't own the airstrip, but he wouldn't need to. Being the Lord of Night meant he would have lots and lots of minions. Buonarroti's people met them as they exited the plane. There were six of them, all male, all vampires, all dressed in the exact same very expensive suit, dark hair cut into the same style, like Ken dolls, but not so handsome. One of them stepped forward and spoke in British-accented English.
My master bids you welcome to Italy. He would have met you himself, but business matters kept him away. No need to see to your luggage. It is my honor to see that it makes it to your rooms with all haste. He signaled, and three of the vampires headed to Adam's left toward the plane. One of them smelled familiar. This one had been among those who stole mercy from him. Adam noted his face very carefully. There was nothing remarkable about his face, but Adam would remember it for a very long time. The vampire caught him at it and involuntarily met his eyes. Adam let the wolf surface for a moment, let the vampire know that he'd been recognized. The secret weakness of all vampires, and it was a big one, was that they all feared death. The only way any vampire was made was because they feared the ending of life enough to give up everything in order to survive. Everything, including the person they had been. Adam saw fear rise into the vampire's eyes, and he was momentarily satisfied. Adam, Honey said, and there was a note in her voice that told him he'd missed something important. He turned his attention to the matters at hand. It was not made clear, the vampire repeated, what your preferred sleeping arrangements were. He was so carefully not looking at Marsilia that Adam turned and raised an eyebrow at her.
I wasn't certain what would please you, she said apologetically.
She intended to play second to his first. Adam wasn't alone in his determination to use weapons that weren't purely physical against Buonarroti. He thought of how he would feel if he saw Mercy playing devoted follower to another man and had to fight back an inappropriate growl. Marsilia smiled at him, and it was an intimate smile, a lover's smile, a little deferential still. And Buonarroti's vampire saw it for what it was. If Mercy were playing a man like that, Adam would know she was about to stab that man in the back. His wolf settled. Mercy wasn't above playing roles and fighting dirty when the odds weren't in her favor. As long as she felt she stood on the side of the angels, she wasn't particular about how her enemies fell. Marsilia was no more ethical in that way than Mercy, and far more vindictive. Buonarroti had chosen his addiction over her, and she had not forgotten nor forgiven it. Buonarroti would eat glass at the sight of her catering to what he thought were Adam's, what, needs? Ego? Distracting Buonarroti would be to their advantage. Hadn't Adam told Honey that he was going to use her to do that? Marsilia could play that game, too. He did wish that Marsilia had discussed this aspect of her plans with him, but even as he thought it, he knew why she hadn't. Marsilia knew that he wouldn't have agreed to play ball. He didn't cheat on Mercy, not even mild flirtation for appearances. What were his choices now? Expose Marsilia? Reject her? He thought about that one. He could do that without making her lie apparent. But the whole point was that Buonarroti saw them as a united front, not to leave Marsilia exposed as a target. Honey, he trusted, could protect herself from anyone but herself. Marsilia? She was strong as hell, but she was vulnerable to Buonarroti.
Adam?
Marsilia asked again, this time touching his shoulder. He didn't back away from her touch, though he wanted to. Adam glanced at Honey and Larry, then shrugged. In for a penny, in for a pound. Mercy might, on a very bad day, have a moment of weakness that would let her believe that Adam would cheat on her with Marsilia, but... Give us a suite that will sleep six, he told the vampire. She would never believe that he'd also sleep with Stefan, Honey, some goblin he'd never met before, and... Holy cow, Elisaveta. She'd know that this was the easiest way for him to make sure all of his people were safe, and to really stick a bug in Buonarroti's peace of mind while he did so. Adam looked at his people and said, We might as well share space as spend the night running down hallways. He turned back to Buonarroti's head minion and let the thought that they were going to be in a vampire's lair, a consideration, not a cause for alarm, come and leave his eyes. Then he said casually, Or days, I guess.
Mercy might object to Larry, murmured Stefan. He was going to play along.
Larry might object to Mercy, said Larry in the exact same tone. You should be so lucky as to have Mercy pick you, said Stefan shortly, and Adam's wolf noticed with sudden sharp interest, totally honestly. Adam shrugged again. Mercy can organize us as she sees fit when we get her back.
It will be like a vacation, said Honey in sultry tones, because Honey was sharp as a tack and a fine actress. We haven't had one of those in a long time.
Honey sold the lie with her body language and her voice, and gave it just enough to be believable. Most of the other supernatural folk kind of thought that the werewolves, who touched a lot more than was a comfortably human norm, all probably slept with their packmates anyway. And those stories were fed by the now vanishingly rare alpha who felt like that was the only way he could dominate his pack. Come to think of it, those would probably still be fairly common in Europe, where there was no Maroc to deal with them.
That is not your reputation, said Bonarata's minion, sounding a little shocked,
which he shouldn't be, given the stories Adam had heard about Bonarata's parties. The minion was looking at Marsilia, and Adam wondered abruptly if the vampire was old enough that he'd known Marsilia before she left.
"A sweet," said Marsilia shortly, but her body leaned into Adam. Her heart was racing, unusual for a vampire, but she'd been very stressed since this had begun.
Adam could relate, but he gave her a reason for her racing heart by caressing her face lightly. He let his wolf rise just a bit. Rage and lust smelled very similar. In his experience, vampires weren't good at sorting through emotions, though they could smell them very nearly as well as a wolf. But the vampire's emotions were skewed. They were selfish creatures by definition, and it left them in trouble when it came to sorting someone else's out.
"We have a suite with 3 bedrooms, said one of the vampires. We can house your pilot and co-pilot in servants' quarters.
My pilot and co-pilot, Adam said. They will stay with the plane.
I'm afraid that won't be possible, said the head minion. My master made a special request that they too accept accommodations with us.
He smiled slyly.
We could bring trundle beds if you want them in your rooms, too.
Adam looked over his shoulder to see that the 2 men were climbing out of the plane with the small bags they carried with them. The pilot was as good-looking as Larry had said, tall for a goblin with sandy gold hair and robin's egg blue eyes. He watched the vampire escorting him warily, temper in the set of his shoulders. But Austin Harris was smart enough not to argue with Bonarata's people. Harris reached out to steady his co-pilot without looking at him when he wobbled on the ramp, too busy watching the vampire to watch his feet. The co-pilot was medium height and average-faced, and so intimidated by the vampires that he very nearly clung to the side of Harris. The co-pilot was a werewolf. The way he sought protection from Harris told Adam, and anyone else who was watching, that he was submissive. It was dangerous to be that submissive when surrounded by vampires. Bonarata's head minion cleared his throat. Right. He wanted an answer to his question. If Adam pulled the pilot and co-pilot into the suite, it would look like they were afraid, which they were. But it would also look like an insult, making clear that they did not expect Bonarata to keep guesting laws. Adam raised his eyebrows in surprise. Does Bonarata sleep with every damn person he hires? Give them their own rooms. He glanced over his shoulder at the pilot and the werewolf again. Harris met his eyes with a worried gaze and then glanced at his co-pilot.
One room would be better, he said.
Better give them 1 room with 2 beds, I suppose, Adam said. Someone as scared as he looks to be isn't going to sleep well alone in a vampire seethe. If we can't make him comfortable, the pilot is going to have to fly us home all by himself while his co-pilot sleeps.
That can be arranged, said the minion, who was watching Harris with interested eyes. Predatory eyes.
I trust in the honor of the Lord of Night that those 2 will be safe from the seethe, Adam said softly. The minion started, looked at Adam, and flushed when he realized that Adam had seen his hunger. The minion closed his eyes and went very still.
They will be our guests, he said, after maybe half a minute of blank face and quiet body. My master's word on it.
So, Bonarata could get and give information through his minions.
at least through this minion. Adam would remember that. Adam glanced at Harris and the wolf again. Putting a handsome man and a vulnerable one in the middle of a sieve, if Bonorata didn't have iron control of his vampires, there might be trouble. Then he thought of Marsilia's assertion that Bonorata